Welcome to Cognitive Flow from OptimalAnesthesia.com. Today, we're tackling venous return. It's absolutely fundamental to hemodynamic stability under anesthesia.
It really is. But, you know, it often seems to live in the shadow of cardiac output, doesn't it?
It does. We focus so much on the pump.
Exactly. And venous return.
Well, it's not just about blood getting back to the heart. It's the foundation, really the absolute bedrock that stable cardiac output is built on.
Yeah, a subtle shift there can cause big problems.
Profound consequences, yeah.
I like thinking of it like traffic. Cardiac output is maybe the speed limit, how fast cars can go.
Okay.
But a powerful engine, you know, the patient's heart, it's kind of useless if the on-ramps are blocked or if there just aren't enough cars getting onto the highway in the first place.
That's a great analogy. Venous return is that flow onto the highway, the supply.
And we do. We tend to laser focus on the heart itself, contractility, valves, all that.
Right, the pump mechanics. And we sometimes overlook the filling part, the preload. But preload isn't just passive, is it? It's not just a tank filling up on its own.
Not at all. It's actively governed by specific pressures, resistances. And if you misunderstand those,
then your decisions about fluids or vasopressors, even ventilation, they might be off, potentially way off.
Absolutely. So I think our mission today for this deep dive is to try and simplify how we think about venous return.
And pull out the really key implications. What does it mean for us day to day in the OR?
Exactly. Let's see.
Okay, so how should we visualize this? You mentioned pressures, maybe an analogy.
Yeah, analogies help. How about a water park? Picture a busy water park.
Okay, I'm there. Splashing sounds.
So the whole systemic circulation, that's the park, and the veins, they're the water slides.
Well, leading down.
The main collection pool. And that's the heart, obviously.
Makes sense. Water flows down.
Right, but why does it flow down? Gravity, sure, but it's about the pressure difference. Height at the top versus height at the bottom.
Okay.
In our circulation, blood flow also depends on a pressure gradient. And at the very top of this whole system, this sort of hydraulic head, we have what's called the mean systemic filling pressure, MSFP.
MSFP. So that's like the height of the water tank feeding the slides, the pressure up top.
Precisely. And down at the bottom, in that collection pool, the heart, there's also pressure.
Right. Atrial pressure. RAP.
Exactly. RAP. That's like the depth of the water in the pool at the bottom of the slides.
So the flow, the venous return, depends on the difference between those two. MSFP and RAP.
That's the core of it. The bigger the difference, the higher the MSFP compared to the RAP, the steeper that gradient, that slope for the blood.
And the faster the flow back to the heart, better venous return.
You got it. That's efficient venous return.
What if things back up at the bottom? Like if the pool gets too full?
Good question. What happens then?
Well, the water slows down, right? The slope isn't as steep.
Exactly. So think clinically, maybe high pressure in the chest because we're using positive pressure ventilation. Or perhaps the right heart itself isn't pumping effectively. It's failing.
Both of those would increase the pressure in that pool, the RAP.
Right. And a backed up pool, a higher RAP, directly shrinks that pressure gradient. MSFP minus RAP gets smaller.
The slope flattens.
The slope flattens, flow slows down, and if it gets bad enough, yeah, things can really start to back up. Flow can even reverse transiently.
Okay, now connect this to something we see all the time. Induction. We give propofol.
Ah, propofol. Yes.
And what's happening there in terms of venous return? It feels like the pressure just vanishes sometimes.
It does, doesn't it? So propofol relaxes smooth muscle, including the smooth muscle in the walls of the veins are water slides.
So the slides get wider, looser.
But kind of, yeah. Think of it like loosening the sides of a balloon that was holding water under pressure. That relaxation causes a drop in the overall pressure within the venous system.
Meaning a drop in the MSFP, the pressure at the top.
Exactly. That venous relaxation, that venodilation, it directly lowers the mean systemic filling pressure.
So even if the RAP stays the same initially?
The difference, the MSFP minus RAP gradient gets smaller. Less driving pressure for venous return.
And that's a big reason why blood pressure tanks after propofol. It's not just the heart getting weaker.
Precisely. Propofol does reduce systemic vascular resistance, the arterial side, which drops pressure too. But critically, it also hits the venous side. It reduces what we call the stressed volume.
Stressed volume.
Yeah.
That's the blood actually pushing outwards, creating pressure.
Yeah, as opposed to unstressed volume, which is just sort of sitting there filling the space. Propofol shifts stressed volume to unstressed volume by relaxing the veins.
So MSFP plummets. even with a perfectly healthy heart muscle.
Exactly. That's a key insight.
Okay, let's try another angle, maybe simpler. A city water tank.
Sure. The MSFP is like the pressure generated by the main water supply tank for the whole city.
And the pressure you get at your tap.
Depends on how full that main tank is, right? And maybe how tight the valves are in the system, the resistance.
So giving a fluid bolus, that's like filling up the city's water tank.
Directly analogous. More volume increases the pressure in the tank, increases MSFP.
And norepinephrine. What does it do in this analogy?
Norepinephrine acts like tightening the valves or maybe squeezing the pipes a bit. It constricts the veins.
So it converts that unstressed volume
back into stressed volume. It effectively pushes more water into the pressure generating part of the system. So it increases MSFP, but by a different mechanism than just adding volume.
Okay, that helps clarify the drug effects. Now, the twist you mentioned earlier, back pressure.
Right, the RAP side of the equation. What happens when that goes up?
We talked about positive pressure ventilation. How does that fit?
Well, when you push air into the chest, you increase the pressure around the heart and great vessels.
Intrathoracic pressure.
Right. And that increased pressure is transmitted to the right atrium, directly pushing up the RAP.
So, back to the water park. It's like someone physically lifts the collection pool higher up the hill.
Perfect image. You're raising the base level at the bottom of the slides.
So even if my MSFP, my water tank at the top, is totally full.
If you raise the pool at the bottom, you flatten the overall slope, the gradient shrinks.
And that explains why a patient might look okay, maybe compensating.
Yeah.
But then you intubate them, start positive pressure.
And suddenly they become profoundly hypotensive. Boom. Because you just significantly increased their RAP and crushed their venous return gradient.
Intubation can really unmask that fragility.
It absolutely can. It tests the whole system.
Okay, we've covered the pressures, MSFP and RAP. What about resistance within the veins themselves?
Good point. Venous resistance, it's the friction or obstacles along the way.
Like potholes on the water slide.
Right.
Or traffic jams.
Exactly. Anything impeding that smooth flow back. Maybe kinks, maybe external compression, maybe increased blood viscosity.
And what influences this resistance? Can we change it?
Well, vasodilation, paradoxically, can decrease venous resistance by making the pipes wider, easier flow.
But other things can increase it.
Sure. Patient positioning, for one. Reverse Trendelenburg makes blood fight gravity more, increasing effective resistance. Dehydration might increase viscosity, adding resistance. Abdominal compartment syndrome physically compresses the vena cava. Lots of factors.
So putting this all together, MSFP, RAP, resistance.
Yeah.
How does this understanding change our actual clinical management? What do we do differently?
Well, first it makes you question just looking at a CVP number in isolation.
Right. A high CVP doesn't automatically mean volume overloaded or even good venous return.
It could just mean high RAP due to right heart failure or high PEEP, right?
Yeah.
The gradient is what matters for flow.
So relying purely on CVP for fluid decisions is risky.
It can be misleading. That's where dynamic parameters come in. Things like stroke volume variation or pulse pressure variation or doing a passive leg raise.
How do those help?
They're trying to assess in real time if the heart can actually use more preload. If you give a fluid challenge, like leg raise, does the stroke volume actually go up? It tests the slope and clearance of the whole pathway. Are they on the steep part of your Frank Starling curve?
So it tells you if improving venous return will likely improve cardiac output. Much more functional.
Exactly. More functional than just a static pressure number.
Okay, what about vasopressors? We touched on norepinephrine.
We need to remember they aren't just about arterial pressure, about SVR. They hit the veins too, affecting venous tone and MSFP.
So using something like phenylephrine, which is mostly an alpha-1 agonist.
Right, strong venoconstrictor. In certain shock states, like sepsis with vasoplegia, where the veins are too relaxed and MSFP is low despite adequate volume, phenylephrine can help restore that venous tone and boost MSFP.
Makes sense there.
If
the patient is just plain empty. Hypovolemic.
Then, as you said, just squeezing the veins harder with phenylephrine might not help much if there's no volume to pressurize. It's like tightening the faucet on an empty pipe. You need volume first, or maybe something like norepinephrine that has both venous and arterial effects, plus maybe some inotropy.
Got it. And ventilation. We keep coming back to that.
Because it's so fundamental. How much PEEP we use, our tidal volumes, how we do recruitment maneuvers,
These
all impact intrathoracic pressure.
Which directly impacts RAP.
And therefore, venous return. You have to be especially mindful with patients who are already volume down or who have RV strain.
In those cases, even small increases in peat could potentially tip them over by impeding venous return too much.
It's a delicate balance. You need the peat for oxygenation, maybe, but you have to watch the hemodynamic cost.
And finally, our choice of anesthetic agent itself.
Yeah. We know the common inhalational agents like sevoflurane and IV agents like propofol. They cause venodilation. They lower MSFP.
So we need to anticipate that.
We do. And maybe in certain situations, severe trauma, tamponade physiology, you might consider agents or techniques that are known to preserve venous tone better. Or if you use propofol or sevo, you just need to be ready to actively support the venous return side, maybe with fluids or vasopressors, right from the start.
It's about knowing the effect and compensating proactively.
Exactly. Proactive, not just reactive.
So the big takeaway here seems to be venous return isn't passive. It's not just blood finding its way back.
Not at all. It's active. It's dynamic. It's driven by these pressures, MSFP, RAP, and modulated by resistance and things like intrathoracic pressure.
And if we understand those forces,
we can anticipate problems. We can interpret hypotension more intelligently. We can choose our interventions, fluids, pressors, ventilation changes much more effectively.
Moving from just reacting to blood pressure numbers to actually managing the underlying physiology.
That's the goal. Prediction and prevention, not just reaction.
Excellent. So what's next? Where do we go from here?
Well, in our next deep dive, I think we should really get practical. How can you actually estimate or assess the state of venous return clinically? In the OR, maybe without needing a PA catheter.
Okay, bedside assessment techniques. And how to tailor fluids and drugs based on that assessment.
Exactly. Getting down to the real hands-on application of these principles.
Sounds great. Looking forward to that. And just a reminder for everyone listening, if you want visual breakdowns of MSFP, RAP, the analogies we used, plus references and structured guides tailored for anesthesia practice, you can find those resources over at optimalanesthesia.com.
Definitely check those out. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious.
And keep your flow optimal. The content with evidence-based reference will be available from June 2025 in the website.